Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Art of Living radio show with me, Victoria Mary Clark. And today in our studio, we have the lovely Kerry O'Neill. Welcome, Kerry.
Hello.
And Kerry is, I suppose, I first knew you as a healer, a Reiki healer, but you've moved on since then. You're more of a multidisciplined healer. And you've just come back from, you've been in China studying Qigong, medical Qigong. So you've been away from Dublin for 3.5 years in Asia. What is it like? First of all, what's it like to come back to this kind of weather after being on a beach? I know you were on a beach in Thailand up until a couple of weeks ago. You turned up in flip-flops and little yoga trousers. Were you expecting nice weather when you got back?
No, I was expecting the worst, but it has been dry most days.
That's true. And it has been dry most days.
It's been dry most days. Yeah. And it's fresh. Every day is fresh.
And I see today you've come equipped with a fake fur hat and a fake fur jacket and furry boots.
Yeah. No. I'm getting
through.
You're
equipped.
I'm equipped. I'm getting there. Slowly but surely.
So what got you started in the world of healing? How did you get into that?
I think it was when, in my early 20s, yeah. My boyfriend, I was diagnosed with cancer.
You were?
No, he was.
Oh, he was.
Okay. He was diagnosed with cancer in my early 20s. And that was the first inclination to naturally put my hands on someone and start to feel and see what was going on inside the body.
Wow, had you had any interest at all in any kind of medicine?
No, I had none. I had none whatsoever. It was just a natural, it was just an instinct. It was a natural instinct that I thought was just because I cared for him, I loved him.
Yeah.
But then it turned out a few years later that I was able to do this with anybody.
Right, and did it help his cancer?
Well, his cancer went away.
It went away.
In layman's terms, the doctor said the cancer ate itself away.
Ate itself away. What kind was it?
He had bowel cancer.
Gosh.
I can't remember. It was moving up towards his heart also. Yeah, and his heart. Moving towards his heart, but it was mostly in his bowel. Started in his bowel.
So you just put your hands in?
But for a long time, maybe 5 hours, 6 hours.
Gosh.
And then I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And then I just remember staying up all night with my hands over his belly. And then I slept maybe for a day after that. He was trying to wake me and I was sleeping. And then eventually I woke up maybe a day later. We went for a little motorbike ride. And again, I was drawn to put my hands around his waist in a certain place as I was sitting on the back of the motorbike.
Yeah.
And again, I felt and I could feel.
Did you feel something coming out of your hand?
No, it was more that I could just feel the energy, you know, between my hand and going the energy going into his body, and I could feel and see what was happening in his body.
You could see it?
I could see it,
wow.
Yeah.
What could you see?
I could see bands of different shades of gray, I would say. Not color, but different shades of, sort of, yeah, gray, white, black, like bands sort of moving very, very slowly, like a movement of some kind of sea urchin or something like that. And then these bands of color, these shades of gray more, were going around. They were sort of getting less.
I'm not going to mention 50 Shades of Grey because it seems inappropriate. I just couldn't help saying it. Anyway, the boyfriend, is he still alive?
He's still alive.
Wow.
He's still alive, yeah.
So he's your living testimonial.
Living testimonial.
Gosh. And so was it because of that you were drawn to learn Reiki?
I think so, because then I was really shy for a few years. I went to the States and traveled for 3 years, went to Canada, spent the last year in Mexico. And that's when I met a fireman at a campfire. And I started telling him, you know, all about this story. For the first time I told anybody in all these years.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, yeah, people do that. That's just called healing.
Hands-on healing.
Mm.
Yeah, in fact, Ireland is actually sort of well-known for this tradition of, in families, passing down the healing hand.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I think it's in my family, my grandmother and her grandmother as well. And even my mom, even though she doesn't access it, you know, she shuts it out. She's a little bit afraid of it.
So you told this farmer?
I told this farmer. He said, yeah, just go up to California, you know. They're all out of
there. They're all
up
there.
Angel healing, they do. And that's when I found, I think I went to San Diego, the first place, and I think I found angel workshops, working with angelic light. I think it was that, an initiation into working with angelic light. That was the first thing. You know, there was this lady and she had a shop, you know, with all the little angels. And I was going, jeez.
Being a nice Irish Catholic girl.
What's all this? And, but then, I was intrigued. You know? She was teaching me laying on of hands and talking to the angels. And so that was my first introduction. And then when I went back to Ireland, I think I studied Reiki and Sehikim. So over a few years, I became a master in both of those. And then I was running workshops, you know, like once a month, and doing private sessions. So that was the beginning. And then from there, I had a connection with the elementals, the elfin, the fairy realm. So connecting with, you know, the sacred sites in Ireland. A deep connection with that. A deep connection there. When the elementals were asking me to map out the ley lines in Ireland. Because it's somewhere ley lines cross, there's a point, there's a vortex, and sometimes those vortexes had like large standing stones in them or different structures. And they were trying to instruct me to reestablish these standing stones, put them back into these particular vortex points on these ley lines. So I had maps. For about less than 1 year, I was driving all around the country, following their guidance and mapping out places. But then I just was exhausted.
Yeah.
So I just gave it up.
So you can pass that on to someone else to do.
Yeah, exactly. I hope someone else took that. And that was it. Then I just studied a lot. You know, I was very much connected to the land, shamanism, healing the land, working with the vortexes of energy, drawing from sacred sites, sending energy into them. And that then, what else, gosh.
And then you got interested in Qigong.
I got interested in Qigong.
A lot of our listeners might know what Qigong is, of course, but some people won't. What exactly is Qigong?
Well, Qigong means, Qi is prana, or energy, or life force, or Qi. And Gong means, it means your storage center. So it means the ability to be able to store Qi, store energy in your body.
You're like a battery.
Like a battery. So you always have a reserve. You can always draw on that reserve. And what it does is it looks like, from the outside, it looks like Tai Chi or slow Kung Fu.
Yeah.
It looks like a moving meditation. But really what you're doing is you're learning how to direct energy with your consciousness.
And you're learning, and store it.
Yeah. So you're learning how to direct it, to cultivate it, to gather it, and to store it. And for many purposes, for healing, for just well-being, for longevity, for many reasons, for insight, for greater vision, you know, for telepathy, for to be more clairaudient, you know. So many, many things.
So what attracted you to it particularly? Do you remember?
I had tried it in, gosh, I forget the lady's name. It's a beautiful woman who worked in the city, and she was... So anyway, I went to a few Qigong classes in the city, a sort of community center, and there were mostly elderly people there, and I just dropped by one day and looked in, and I just joined. And I, just from 1 hour session, just from standing there moving my arms around with this group, I mean, I could feel tremendous power tunneling out my hands.
Wow.
You know, through my body, like I was a vortex, a complete vortex of energy in my body. And I was, you know, obviously I was very impressed by this, and I began to research it online. And I had decided already in the end of 2010, beginning of 2011, I think, that I wanted to drop into my true potential before the end of this Mayan calendar.
Right.
For the 21st of December 2012. And I just had this strong, imminent feeling that I needed to prepare myself and I needed to just drop into my true potential. So at the time, I was looking for something to immerse into. And it didn't really matter. I was looking at for yin yoga, different kinds of yoga. Then I started researching the Qigong.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I could really immerse myself in for a year or two. And right. just fully drop in mm-hmm. and let go of everything else external.
Right.
So the Qigong just was attracting me the most.
And that was in China?
Yeah. I headed off. I had sold my business and I decided to head off. I had planned to go for 2 years with this one master.
So you didn't even, it wasn't even like a course that you could sign up to online. It was you persuading this guy to teach you.
Yeah, I was interviewed for 3 months.
You were interviewed by this guy?
By email.
By email. 3 months. No, to see if you're up to the... So you were like, what's that Jackie Chan movie, you know, where the kid goes off, the Karate Kid? You were like the Karate Kid.
Yeah, just an older version.
Being initiated by a master.
Well, it was his wife who was speaking, because she spoke English. She didn't actually really speak English. So we didn't really speak very much.
And how did you come across him in the first place?
Just researching online. You know, I was researching for about 6 months also, trying to find the right place. Yeah, I was really keen on, I just wanted to, yeah, like I said, I wanted to fully just go into myself somehow.
You know, so this guy, after interviewing you, how did he determine whether you were a suitable candidate?
I don't know. In the end, they just said, okay, you can come over, uh-huh. you know, meet us at this date in Beijing,
mm-hmm.
and we'll bring you to our sacred mountain.
Right. So you've never met these people?
No.
Didn't know anything about them, except what you found online.
Yeah. And then
we wouldn't necessarily recommend to our listeners, would we, to do this?
Well, yeah, because it's about intuition.
Okay.
You have to trust your heart. You know, if your heart says, do it. Always. Always follow your heart.
Okay.
I would say absolutely, more definitely. And, always follow your heart. But, I mean, it led me into some obscure places.
So you rocked up in China with having not learned to speak the language?
No, I did. They told me I had to learn. So I did there was a language school, uh-huh. Fulham Square, and I studied there maybe for 1 month.
Right.
I had to learn Mandarin.
So how much did you manage to learn in 1 month?
Well, I thought I had really accomplished a lot, but apparently when I got there, no one could understand me at all. So it was a disaster because there's so many dialects.
Yeah.
So I was rocking in thinking I was like, you know, really cool. And then obviously they didn't understand a thing because there's so many tones and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But after being there for like 1 year, I was able to get by and, you know, ask the basic things and learn the basic symbols and just ask how to get around, where's the bathroom, a cab, you know, things like that. But yeah, it's not easy.
We're going to take a musical break and we'll be right back and we'll talk a bit more about your amazing, epic journey. So welcome back to The Art of Living, and today we're talking to a very fascinating person who is Kerry O'Neill. And Kerry O'Neill is a healer, and she has recently come back from training in Qigong. And she was just explaining just before the break that Qigong is energy being stored. Would that be the correct definition? And Kerry spent 2 years training in China. What was it like for you coming from Dublin and being like, I have to confess, I did already know you before you left. And I know that you're very much into your fashion and your hair is always beautifully done. And you're quite a normal girl and you know, you're into looking good, right? And you didn't really have much access to that type of thing. What did you do about your highlights?
Well, needless to say, I became rather humble.
Did you?
I became rather humble. I was living the masters. I had four masters during that period, and they were very poor because actually Qigong is pretty much banned in China since 2001 because of Falun Gong.
Right.
And there was a blanket ban on all Qigong. And over the recent years, they have allowed 12 forms of Qigong to as legal in China because they're under the name of sport.
Oh, right.
So that's why they're allowed.
So it's like karate, considered like.
Yeah. So otherwise, all the other 3,000 and more forms of Qigong in China are completely banned. So when I went, I couldn't apply for a student visa or anything.
No.
I could just apply for a regular visa, and they were told me I had to be quiet and not tell anyone.
Right.
About that I was doing, yeah, studying Qigong. So the police called to the house once when I was in one training, and they just walked in the door. Plainclothes police just walked in the door and were questioning my teachers. And I was just sitting there. They said I was just a friend.
Right.
But they never had any pictures or books or anything out. It was always, everything was always hidden all the time. It was this kind of covert. But it was, yeah, I was living with them pretty much very poor conditions with lots of cockroaches. And, you know, so I really had to, and very poor quality of food. And yes, so the hair.
And you were pretty fussy about your food as well as,
yeah,
your hair.
I used to be. I was really,
really?
Into supplements and, yeah, health foods. So I just.
You shopped
to,
only in Donnybrook Fair.
Only Donnybrook Fair and health shops. So I had to just drop everything. I had to drop everything.
And presumably you also had nobody to talk. I mean, you'd no, like, peers, nobody, no friends.
No, I had no friends. And I occasionally, some, like, a foreign person would come for, like, a week, mm-hmm, or maybe two. And, you know, from all over the world. In the beginning, in the first few months when I was there. But then after that, it became, I was mostly alone and mostly in silence because my teachers, a lot of my teachers didn't speak English. And even if they did, they didn't really speak a lot.
I suppose they didn't do chit-chat, did they?
No,
gossip.
No.
You liked gossip.
No. No, there was no such thing as chit-chat or gossip. If I asked a question about anything that happened, the answer would be, never mind. But I'm having all these amazing feelings and my body is like disappearing. Never mind. I'm in my liver. I'm running through my veins. Never mind.
Was it like demanding physically and emotionally, the journey, the experience?
Yeah,
it was. Was it painful?
It was very demanding.
What, yeah, was your day like?
Well, we did an 8-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
And we would practice Qigong all day long.
Like, so what time did you get up? Hours.
With different periods, it was different. Sometimes I'd work between 7 and 8 and have a lunch break. And then we'd do like 3 hours and then have a breakfast break. Then we would have another few hours, then a lunch break, then another few hours. Then we might do 1 hour in the evening.
Right.
We'd have a break for dinner.
Mm.
And I would be practicing Qigong all the time. For a while, we did 1 hour a day of, because I wanted to study some of the books and I wanted to translate some of the books. So some days I had, you know, my translator and my teacher's translator, and I tried to understand some of the ancient texts. So I translated one book, mm-hmm, also when I was there, most of one book, because I wanted to understand the theory, mm-hmm, as well. So that took up some of the day, but otherwise it was all just practice. And when I learned, eventually it was all moving, looked like moving meditation, but eventually you'd move into stillness. So then, as you know, we'd have to stand or stay in one posture for up to 2 hours.
2 hours.
Mm.
Amazing.
And that means you could go inside and you'd start to begin the journey inside.
So you'd just be standing there with your hands in a particular position?
Yeah.
Wow. Was that tough for you to do?
Well, we gradually built up. So we'd start 20 minutes, you know, we'd start 45 minutes, 1.5 hours, and we'd build up to 2 hours. And then when I was able to do that, I was completely, you know, you go inside. So your body starts to disintegrate, to crumble away, to the terrifying experience.
Yeah.
Then eventually when I had no body, I was able to just journey inside. You know, just go deeper and deeper and deeper into the deeper universes within ourselves. And that's when it was really, got really interesting. That's ultimately what I wanted, but I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
You know, so it was beautiful. So that's was the start of my inner journey. It was about, in 2011 in Beijing. That's when it started, my whole deep, deep understanding of how the cosmos is inside of us.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So that was really beautiful. So that was, that was from standing 2 hours maybe in the morning and maybe another 2 hours in the afternoon.
And at the end of that entire experience, you went off to live in China? No, in India for a bit? You lived in Tibet? Mm. Was it Tibet?
No, I didn't go to Tibet. I went to India and I spent 5 months there. I went to the Himalayas and I just spent 6 weeks in the Himalayas. I went up there to go to silence. So I think it was the month of October and half of November. I stayed until it began to snow, until I was so cold I had to leave. But I just went, I needed some quiet. So I just went and just went into silence by myself. And a lady, she cooked for me once a day. She left a hot meal on my balcony.
So you were a bit like one of those monks who goes off into a silent retreat.
Yeah, exactly. Except I was doing it myself. So I just didn't have any structure. I wanted to have no structure and no plans and just see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't even planned to do Qigong, but I ended up doing also, like, between 5 and 8 in the morning, I did Qigong. Then I had a 2-hour break for brekkie. Then I studied Qigong, practiced Qigong for another 2 hours till noon. And then I had the afternoon off. I used to go walking in the mountains, which was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then at 5 o'clock, I would come back and I would practice from 5 to 8 again. So for sunrise and sunset, I had 3-hour practice.
So you're an incredibly disciplined person.
I can be.
Can you pass this on to anyone else? Could you train other people to be incredibly disciplined like you?
I don't know. I mean, you know, when we find something that really means something to us, we love it. So it's not even like a discipline. The time flies. We love it. So when we do what we love,
mm-hmm.
it may look like we're disciplined from the outside, but it's really just because we love it. We're so immersed in it and the time flies. I loved it. I just really loved it. I loved that period. Although now I'm not practicing right now. I stopped all my practices then a year ago.
And now you live in Thailand.
And I'm currently living in Thailand, you could say.
So that must be quite luxurious compared to living in China.
Oh yeah, it is. Mm. It's so nice and warm and comfortable.
You live on a beach.
I live across the road. I love overlooking a beach on the side of the, you know, in the jungle, overlooking the ocean.
And you work at a yoga retreat.
I'm working currently at Vikasa Yoga Retreat in Lamai, Koh Samui.
Mm-hmm.
I just finished teaching on a yoga teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, mostly over there, I'm doing craniosacral therapy. I'm doing that and incorporating some intuitive healing into it, or holistic consultancy, with mostly craniosacral therapy. That's what I'm mostly doing, which I also studied in my late 20s in Ireland.
Right. Mm. So you've studied so much stuff and you've traveled so much. What, like, if somebody's listening and they just want a very quick fix, is there any top tip that you can give people to feel really great that you've learned in all this studying?
Hmm. Okay. I would say my top tip, and this is my top tip to myself also.
Uh-huh.
And a constant reminder to myself. It's sort of like my little new mantra. So it's take life, take everything, half serious and half not. And what I mean by that is the half serious means that you show up, for yourself, that you show up for any situation, that you're completely present in every situation.
So like being in the moment.
Yeah.
Really
just,
being in the moment.
Being in the moment. Just show up to everything, no matter what it is. Mm. Show up. And then the half not means you always have a half smile on your face. You know, so you're always showing up and being there, but with a little smile. So, you know, you're fully present, but you're not taking the whole damn thing too seriously. You know?
That's a very interesting thing to say for someone who has studied so seriously and so with such dedication.
But what I'm saying is that I showed up, mm-hmm. I was completely there,
mm-hmm.
but it's important not to take anything too seriously, because then we can become too centered in the mind.
You're right.
And we can put ourselves in a box.
Sure.
Whereas if you soften the edges around the mind, you know, if you just soften that, and you can enter into awe and wonder.
Yeah.
And then you allow so much more to come in than you ever expected. You know, so that's what the little half smile is to be open to be in awe about everything. You know?
Well, I suppose that's a very Irish gift, not taking life too seriously, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah.
It seems absolutely to come naturally.
Yeah, the old shindig.
You know, just like laughing at stuff, taking the piss out of ourselves, particularly, out of other people, a lot.
Yeah, just to be...
So are we quite enlightened as a race, do you think?
Well...
As a tribe.
I don't know independently if the Irish people are enlightened as a race.
Well, you seem to be a shining example.
I think we're Irish people are very much connected to the land. I think we have a wonderful gift to be able to connect to the land. We have, a lot of in our folklore, we have a strong connection with the fairy realm, the elementals. So I think...
And what my experience, Irish people seem to have an innate understanding of healing that is sort of magical, or energy healing, or, you know, all these kind of holistic healing things that are outside the normal allopathic medicine realm.
I agree. I think it's naturally, I think Irish people are naturally gifted in that way.
And they get it. They understand.
Yeah, a lot of the older people, very intuitive people, there's a lot of really old healers in Ireland who are just naturally gifted, naturally intuitive. You know, don't make a song and dance about it.
Exactly.
It's always been in their family. So it's a natural gift, whether they hear the banshee screeching before someone dies, or whether they talk to the Virgin Mary, or everyone has, you know, everyone puts a different name on it.
Yes.
When it's just coming from source. So when everyone, you know, to make it more comfortable for the individual, they just have to relate it to something sometimes. So there's either, fairies, Virgin Marys, or banshees, or, you know, a whole varied...
Now, we are almost out of time, but if listeners want to get hold of you, how can they do that?
Are
they allowed to do that?
My email is kerry@bluntworks.net.
Okay. kerry@bluntworks.net.
Or kerry@cosmicboulevard.net.
Ooh, I like that better.
Yeah,
okay. kerry@cosmicboulevard.net. Nice.
.com.
Oh, sorry, .com. Okay.
Cosmicboulevard.com. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for talking to us. It's been an enlightening experience.
No, thank you so much,
Victoria. And I hope we can find someone as interesting as you for next week. And do tune in again.